So this will be sitting in the middle of the table making a recording. This is test number 4. I was hoping we can get this recording to play on my computer. Testing 1, 2, 3. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, I'm ready whenever you are.
That guy changes career every 5 weeks.
To order, I'd like everyone to please stand for the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So, I'll accept a motion to approve the minutes from last September 6th meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
So any amendments or changes? You're good? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. We forgot to do attendance. I'm sorry.
Certainly. Brian Cahill?
Here.
Herbert Litz?
Here.
Thomas Corcoran?
Here.
Peter Criswell?
Here.
Chris Hewitt?
Here.
Joe Maloney is absent, and Megan Speary?
Present.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So tonight we have two separate presentations. One is going to be from the Hudson Valley Film Commission, and we have the Chair, Greg Miola, and the Hudson Valley Film Commission Board Member, Laurent Rato, and Tom Muro. And so, I don't know which one of you guys are going to be the spokesman.
Greg's going to be.
Greg's going to be.
No, he's not.
All right. So just to give you a little bit of background, you know, I think we all recognize, you know, that this is the economic development arts, and if there's an industry where those two things combine, it's the film industry. And I just think it's really crucial that we recognize the impact that the film industry has in Ulster County and the economic engine that it actually is. And so I, you know, welcome the Hudson Valley Film Commission to this committee and let them know that, you know, we're here to help where we can. And, you know, you have friends on this committee, and we'll do what we can to help you folks out.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
So I'll turn it over to Mr. Rowe.
So I'm going to keep it short because I know you are all very busy with many things. Just playing a slideshow of some recent projects. Not so recent, but these are all filmed in Ulster County. That's Ellenville Hospital. I could literally just sit and describe every scene, but I'm going to concentrate more on the last quarter. So the last quarter that we had was one of our best quarters, and we just broke the 2021 record for the entire year. We're now at about $60 million in direct spending, with another $50 million in indirect spending, which comes from shopping, tourism, dining, recreation, and local screenings, services, royalties, internships, new home buyers, and new businesses. We describe it in detail on page 6, I believe, and give a few examples of indirect spending. I'm sorry, it's page 8, so I'm sorry. It's in there somewhere. Anyway, this is a short recap, but hopefully you'll get a chance to read it. But just to give you an idea, so far this year we've had 372 production days at 174 locations. That's created 722 local crew jobs. 3,000 actors and background extras were hired. And rental rooms, which we're still tabulating for the third quarter, is up to 44,000 room nights. Most of that is actually in Kingston, and the other location where that's where we rent a huge amount of rooms is Fishkill, the hub in Fishkill. Most of the films that are in Newburgh house everybody in Fishkill. But we had a great quarter. I always spend the end of the month visiting everybody at Best Western and the Holiday Inn Express, and I speak with everyone to find out how things went, and they give me the numbers, which we double check against what we get from the films. on page two, you're going to see that the basically all of the money that we've accrued over 22 plus years. We did not start collecting data until about 2010, so the first line is actually estimated. It's probably a pretty low estimate, but as you can see, it keeps growing year after year. We certainly did not have a great 2020 due to COVID. We had two films in January, Werewolves Within and My Secret Diaries of an Exchange Student, which was a Brazilian film that came here that we arranged to have them film, and mostly in Ulster. So we did have a terrible 2020, but things picked up very quickly in 2021, and again, we're only in the third quarter, and we've already beat the totals for 2021. If on page three, you'll see some of the films that we worked with only in the third quarter, and all the asterisks indicate films that were primarily produced in Ulster County. Fallout is probably one of the biggest productions that Amazon Studios has ever done. It's a global production. They're actually, I think, in Croatia right now. We worked with them from October 2021 for about 6 months, and were able to find several locations that they ended up using, including Widow Jane Mine and the quarry at Sojourner Truth Park in Kingston. We also recommended the parking lot at Ulster Community College, which they were thrilled about. The only thing they weren't thrilled about is that they weren't allowed to keep the photos that they took online because they were told to immediately take them down by Amazon Studios. We're also not allowed to use the word fallout, so I might be struck dead. I'm supposed to use the word Hondo. That's the code name. All these films usually have a code name. The movie Family was based out of the old Kawasaki plant on Route 28. That is known as Woodstock Film Studios, and we just arranged a 10-year lease for that space with a company coming in called Cobalt Stages, which is going to be doing digital backgrounds, which is the future, the Mandalorian effect, and they may not use real farms anymore. They may actually use digital farms. Hopefully not.
And soon we'll be eating digital food.
There you go. Full Circle's a movie by Steven Soderbergh that filmed for 2 days in Stone Ridge. They needed a hunting lodge. The Gunks commercial we worked with extensively, we actually found them all their actors. That's a group out of Utah that came here, and I don't know why they had a group out of Utah coming to do a commercial about the Gunks, but there you go. But they did spend some good money, and they hired all locals. Lost on a Mountain in Maine we worked with very extensively. We recommended most of the department heads, actually, on that, and then we found a lot of the picture cars and recommended all sorts of things for that, especially the locations. Some of the locations that you'll see here we recommended. That's usually how we start with these productions. They reach out to us and say we need to film Maine in the Hudson Valley, and we recommended Mohonk Preserve, we recommended the Rosendale Camp, and we recommended all sorts of other places that I don't know if it looked like Maine because we had a drought in July and August, but they did do a set build at the Saugerties Performing Arts Factory where they had a lot of wind and
rain
and foam rocks. You'll probably see the foam rocks at some point. Manifest just finished filming. They did an extra half day. They filmed at right on at the gatehouse area on Butterville
Road,
and it's a little controversial because the town didn't exactly work with the five residents on Butterville in the best way, but that happens, and hopefully on the next film they'll do a better job communicating with the residents. It's not really hard to do that, and when some we'd love to work with towns, and we're happy to do so. It's just a matter of communicating and sending people to talk to the people and making them feel welcome instead of invaded. Same thing happens in other places. And then Thriller is a movie that's currently being filmed. And Wolf is just a little music video that was filmed at Snyder's Tavern.
Snyder's Tavern.
Oh, really? Are you kidding me?
Oh, for the IAS, which is a pretty big band.
Yes,
so that's a little bit rundown. And then the testimonials I'm not going to read out loud, but we like to use other people's comments rather than brag about our work. And we have a great relationship that, you know, is now in way past its second decade. I worked with some of the same people I worked with in 2004 when War of the Worlds was here. Some of the same location scouts I worked with back then are now line producers. So it's great to be able to stay in touch with people over a period of decades, because you grow to trust each other. And the film business is all about trust, because they're spending millions of dollars and they need to feel comfortable. You'll notice there's a quote from Dean Holterman, who's actually the owner of Woodstock Film Studios, talking about Cobalt Stages, which is going to probably go live sometime at the end of October. We'll have an event there, hopefully, so people can walk through the Sahara digitally. Anyway, I'll leave that with you. You can read some of the other comments. And then we have a few bios. Greg Miola is a Local 52 member. Local 52 is also a sponsor of the organization, and we're proud to have their support, because that's the studio mechanics organization that is really behind all of the bigger films. You want to say anything about Local 52? We also protect the workers.
International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. So the Local 52 is based in New York. It covers Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware. Thousands of members, and good strong union. And if there's a major film production in New York, it's covered by Local 52.
And we also work with non-union films, and actually a lot of the people who are non-union were once working on low-budget non-union films, so it's the best way to get trained.
Paying our dues.
Paying your dues, exactly. The old-fashioned way. Tom Muro is a former Montessori teacher at George Washington Montessori School. He now golfs as a professional.
Right? I'm retired.
Professional softball player?
Yeah, not quite.
And Emily Santos, Emily Dos Santos, was born in the Sardis. She asked me to apologize for not being here, but she's in Los Angeles currently. And then, so there's a little bit about how local we are. I've been here for about since 1988. I raised my three kids here, and I've been very passionate this whole time about bringing films here. But, you know, one of the reasons I was so passionate about it is because I wanted my kids to have good jobs and in the film business. And that was something that just didn't exist when we started. You had to go to L.A. or you had to go to New York City, and that's changed. My kids were smart enough not to get into the film business. So they're doing just fine. But it is really satisfying to be on sets and see 22-year-olds who live in Kingston, who live in Saugerties, or who live in Newburgh or Poughkeepsie, who are able to stay in the area and not have to move to the city. It's absolutely fantastic. On page 8, we have our funding needs. Obviously, we are always looking for funding. We desperately need funding to continue our efforts, so we can continue soliciting and supporting film and TV production in the region. It's a very competitive business. We don't only compete with other states and countries, but we compete with other parts of the state. Everybody wants these million-dollar films in their region. They bring in jobs and all sorts of economic development. We provide a free directory that that film productions use all the time. We try to make it as easy and as unbureaucratic as possible so that people can basically help call people, find them, find people themselves just by going to our directory. We also we stay involved with the films. We promote them throughout until they're released. And you'll get, you know, if you're on, if you ever check out our Facebook or our Instagram or our webpage, you'll see that, you know, we always love to let people know when a film that was made here is going to be premiering on most of the films. Most of the productions we work with now are streamers. They're the big you know, it's Hulu. We now work with Hulu and HBO and Peacock
Netflix,
and Netflix,
Amazon
Studios. That's been the biggest difference in 23 years. We started out working with films, you know, and they were actually filming on film. That doesn't exist either. They all use digital, and now everything's basically. They're here for 8 months, 8-9 months. So that's the good news. Sometimes it's not great because it's such a long period of time, and it can be exhausting working 14 hours a day, 16 hours a day for 8 months at a time. But it does create full-time work, which is something that we always dreamed of. And it would take 50 little independent films to do what one of these major productions does, like Pretty Little Liars or Poker Face. So we're really gratified that they choose to film here, and they kind of have fallen in love with the area. And you know, they usually rent out one of the qualified production facilities, like Upriver in Saugerties or Umbra in Newburgh. There's one in Dover Plains, and there's actually two that are going to go live, actually right in Kingston, but I'm not allowed to say it until next week. But that'll be exciting. Anyway, a little bit about the support that we used to receive. Prior to 2018, the Film Commission received promotional. And I say promotional because I worked very closely with all of the members of the IDA. We actually used to travel to other counties and explain to them why they should be supporting us as well. Steve Perfit, John Morrow, we would go to Columbia County or Orange County or Sullivan County and get them on board. So we had a great relationship. We were getting anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 annually from the IDA. That all stopped. That all started with Al Ford, and it all stopped with Mr. Leverett. After that, in 2018 and 2019, we were supported directly through the County of Ulster. I included some of the language that was in the contract. We hope that you'll consider supporting us as we continue to bring economic development to the area and jobs, and thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions anybody has.
I was curious about Cobalt Studio. How large is that? Is it going to be able to take those big, long kind of productions?
No, Cobalt's going to have to remain smaller, but they can because they're digital. So it's a digital footprint. They're basically building a psych right now, a green screen, and they're going to be putting all of these the technologies beyond me right now. I'm going to have to take one of their tutorials, but basically you're going to be able to fake being anywhere in the world, and it's going to bring a whole bunch of, it's going to bring different work to this area. It's going to bring a lot of commercials and probably music videos as well, as opposed to feature films. So it's going to bring a different type of work. They have a studio right now in Hoboken, so they're actually, they live on Zena Road. They want to be close to home. And we introduced them to Dean, and it worked out great. And
it's very local for them, then. They live on Zena Road, yeah.
Yeah.
Right down the street.
Yep.
Some commute.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're working on it right now. And
so is that in the town of Kingston?
It's actually town of Ulster.
Town of Ulster.
It is right town there. Of Ulster. Did I say Kingston? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I thought that was town of Ulster.
28.
Yeah. So it goes city of Kingston, town of Ulster, town of Kingston, town of Ulster, town of Hurley. That's how it goes.
I was called the cow.
Wow. Buster Dunn.
Buster Dunn.
Buster Dunn.
Yeah, Buster Dunn. Yeah.
Hudson Valley Cycle Center.
Yeah. The Wahana place forever and ever. Then it was.
I bought.
Yes, I did.
One or two bikes.
Did you?
Back in the day.
Yeah, I was shocked to see that place close. It was like, anyway, so
we have two films at the that studio this year. So this is going to be a third one. Mm-hmm. So we had Blue Light there, and then we had Family. If you want to see a full list, by the way, of every film, I think I'm sure I'm forgetting some films. If you go to our website, we have a list of all the films.
Mm-hmm. So I think Legislator Hewitt had a question.
Sure.
Was the last year you received funding 2019?
Yeah.
And last time you presented to us this year, was there a result of that presentation? Are you working with?
I was never able to present. The IDA always somehow.
Didn't you present to us about 3 months ago?
Yes, online, but nothing ever came of that. There was no follow up. This is my follow up, my second follow up. I did originally meet with the county executive Pat Ryan and said that we could count on support, but I believe a month later, COVID happened. So.
So that's a good segue into my question, and is that have you contacted the new IDA board? We have a new IDA board.
No,
and I know that you had a good relationship with them in the past.
Yes.
And so my recommendation, number one, would be to reach out to that new board and see if they'd be willing to discuss things with you. You know, get back to that funding stream for sure. You know, and the second thing was, so you mentioned a couple of the other studios. Yep. Local studios, and you collaborate with them and you work in full cooperation with them. That's a good relationship with the.
Yeah, we have a great relationship. I'm on the phone with them all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm always trying to get productions into those studios. Mm-hmm. We just lost the film to Georgia called My Dentist's Murder Trial, which we were really hoping we'd film locally. I'm not saying
we lose that.
It was a long case.
How do we lose that to Georgia?
They're a two-story here.
I mean, they could use the real tapes.
First of all, it's based on a New Yorker story by a friend of mine who lives up in Lake Hill, and it was supposed to happen right here in Saugerties, and they thought better of it, maybe because it's so local.
Yeah, that could be. That was something. Oh, that's a sad one. You know that one.
We're always trying to get somebody into one of the studios, preferably up. You know, I talk to Shoshana at Upriver all the time, and we're always trying to find something. Mm-hmm. The last film we were working, there was a production called Green Lantern, but they wanted 175,000 square feet, mm-hmm. and nobody's got 175,000 square feet of studio of qualified production space. So.
But you also certify them.
We also certify them. We work with them to get them certified. Yeah, so I just...
Tax credit.
One of the ones that I'm going to be announcing next week, I guess the secret's out about COBOL. So... but there's another...
I posted it already.
There's another one that... the website went live today. We're going to be sending out a press release about that soon. And we worked with them very closely and provided actually photos of everything that's been filmed there in over the past 23 years to make it easier for them.
Great.
I have a quick question about have there been any changes to tax credits in New York State? Or
there have been.
Horizon?
Yeah.
Official or?
No, not really. Okay. So actually, you know, one of the interesting things about the tax credit is that the tax credit was always 25% across the board. Actually, it was 30 across the board, and then they reduced it to 25%. Back in beginning in 2010, in my annual report, I used to complain about how we were getting the short end of the stick from the state because anything that's outside the zone is 25 miles from Columbus Circle. We had to pay. Everybody has to pay for. Travel, for turnaround, for hotels. So if you stay close to, if you stay within 30 miles of the city, you don't have to pay for any of those. You work as a local. The county executive back then, Mike Hine, was kind of furious about that. And eventually we worked up a plan, and he drove it through the assembly and the legislature, and that did come to fruition. And that's an, so we do now get an additional 10%. That's important to understand that that additional 10% is on below the line labor only. So below the line means non-creative costs. The celebrity salary doesn't count. The director salary doesn't count. The composer's salary doesn't count. Anything creative, the writer doesn't count. So so New York State, in essence, even though it's a pretty large tax credit, it's a very conservative tax credit in the sense that if they don't offer any above the line cost, I like that because I think it's irresponsible to do that. We've lost a lot of, however, we've lost a lot of projects because we don't offer above the line cost. We lost the movie Joy, starring Jennifer Lawrence, to Massachusetts. They wanted to do it in Saugerties because the director's daughter lives in Saugerties. And we lost it to Massachusetts because Massachusetts was willing to subsidize Jennifer Lawrence's salary, which was only $15 million.
I don't think you're going to get that here.
There are states that still do that, yeah. And I find it irresponsible. Yeah. Currently, we're losing movies to Jersey because Jersey now has a stipulation that if you hire a New Jersey resident in your movie, they will pay part of his salary. Hmm. So we just had a film, Yale Productions, with Samuel Jackson, who has a place in...
Kill Room or something?
The Kill Room. He has a place in Jersey, and they paid his salary, which is the reason they did it there. Oddly enough, the co-star is Uma Thurman, who's from Woodstock. So, I felt... And it was the production company that we did. The first 10 films they did, we helped them like crazy. They're also the reason that most of the union people in this area are now part of the union because they got flipped because they were doing things
organized.
They got organized. I keep saying the wrong word, sorry. That's why Greg's always next to me.
Okay, well.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, yep, thank you. And so does anyone have any other questions? Are the other legislators that are present have any questions or anything you want to ask? No? You're good?
If you want to be an extra, I know that's a question that everyone's not willing to ask right now. But if you ever want to be an extra, you just email us and we'll put you on the list. And we're always looking for extras.
All right.
Salary? So the salary for non-union, it's about $175 for 8 hours.
Okay, great. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
A lot more than we're making right here at this table.
Yeah. My peaks got paid more than that. But there were 13 of them.
Once you get into overtime, though, it's a different story.
Yeah.
Golden.
Golden. You don't want to do Golden. He did Golden Time on Gilded Age, right? Didn't they do double Golden Time on Gilded Age one? Last year? Anyway, people were getting paid about $1,200 a day on Gilded Age because of that. But there were 3 hours of makeup in the morning and then 3 hours of makeup in the evening. So. But I don't think they made the crew wear makeup. Only corsets.
Well, again, thank you, folks, for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Hopefully, we will be able to, be in touch and see where we can go. And again,
thank you, sir.
There's no way you're keeping that.
Yeah, we don't need.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank
All right.
You.
Yep. Thanks.
Take care.
So we should get in touch with the.
I would recommend trying to get in touch.
You guys don't. Do you have money to?
We just got the budget presentation today. From the executive's office. So we are still just at the infancy stages of, how the money will be allocated for 2023.
It's in the realm of the possibility.
I would say that there is. There's a lot of discretionary money in that budget this year that I think...
When we talk about the Hudson Valley Film Commission, it's basically a law wrong.
Right.
I mean, I guess not everyone knows that, but it is a law. I'm just... helping on the side, so it all comes down to making sure we can keep Laurent in the county.
Right. No, I think it's important. We recognize you know, the contribution to the economy in the county and to the arts in the county. You know, like Lawrence said, people that have moved here and are stayed here because they can make a living here. That's very important to us, you know.
Great.
And so great. We will definitely have discussions going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and for me, I appreciate the arts and I love the arts, but to me this is labor.
No, I hear it.
But it's a labor of love.
It's a labor, well, you know, after a 16-hour shift, the love dwindles a little.
Dwindles a little.
Take care.
Cornell's not on today. No. Yeah. All right. So, right now, thanks, guys. I want to recognize County Planner Dennis Doyle for a few minutes to go over. I don't know if you are going to be able to discuss your budget in any way for 2023, or at least give us a high level.
I think so. Can you hit Control L, and that should come up full screen if you hit Control L.
You can see behind.
It's not.
I'm gonna get eyes back.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm...
Control doesn't work. Yeah, there you go. Something better than that. So thank you very much for an opportunity. I don't know how much time I have.
As much time as you need, Dennis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
7 minutes.
No, actually, we have to be out of here.
I can do it in two. How's that? I'll bid 2 minutes. How's that?
We have a meeting in here at 6:45.
Sure.
Or whenever you're done.
Or whenever we're done.
So it's a brief presentation. I provided it to Juan, and hopefully that she can provide it to the rest of the committee. It's an overview of the work that we do and an overview of what I know about the 2023 budget without a lot of detail at this particular point in time because we have not seen the budget. I know what we put into the budget requests, and I was told that my requests were met, so I'm assuming that that is the case. So the organizational chart, there's a total staff of 8 within the planning department. We're divided into essentially 5 major buckets in terms of the areas that we cover. One is transportation, the other one has to do with special projects, which includes some of our open space work, trails work. We have land use and demographics. We have a requirement under state law to review certain land use actions in the county. And that's also in the charter, and that's done through the county planning board, and we provide support services to the county planning board. We do agriculture, housing, and community development block grants, that's what CDBG stands for. And we do other departments and capital program support, and I'll get into that later. So major program areas, transportation, housing, agriculture, open space, land use, demographics, special projects, and capital programs. Major cost centers are department staff, again, 8 staff, about $750,000, $740,000 for the staffing. Professional services, planning studies, about $420,000 in the budget for professional services. These are consultant services that these areas support the Ulster work of the Ulster County Transportation Council, and I'll get into what that effort is. And then professional services, other fees, about $367,000 in that item. And that supports our housing smart growth work, our fair share housing work, continuum of care, the farmland preservation plan, traffic safety board, capital program support, green infrastructure, preliminary plans, infrastructure mapping, and prior growth areas, and other minor contracts within that area. Major revenue areas of federal aid. We get about $550,000 in federal aid on an annualized basis to support the Transportation Council. We budgeted about $560,000 this year because we have some back funding that we can take advantage of. We also have some grant work that we're currently working on that will come in this year for the Farmland Preservation Plan, and that's about $50,000. We have an award letter for that money, but we don't have a contract yet. As soon as we get the contract, that'll come in front of the legislature. So let's talk about transportation, if I can. So the county is, the planning department is a host agency for something called an Ulster County Transportation Council. We are a metropolitan planning organization, and we have to meet certain federal requirements. We have 3 major efforts that we have to put forward, and I'll go into those later, but I just want to talk quickly about some studies. We're currently looking at a Route 4455 congestion management study that's in our planning program. We have to update something called a Human Services Coordination Plan. That literally is the nonprofit folks that transport elderly and handicapped around the county. We have to coordinate our transportation work with that. We have funding sources that go to those individuals. The example I would give you is that RUPCO's project on Flatbush Avenue, two of the buses were essentially provided by the Transportation Council, funding by the Transportation Council. We have an award that we have yet to announce for other buses, but other past recipients include ARC within the county, and as many as seven vans for that particular area, and about somewhere in the neighborhood of about $200,000 on an annual every other year basis, on a 2-year basis. We have an ongoing study with respect to resiliency. We're looking at essentially the transportation system resiliency work. We have moved our studies away from the typical studies that were done and produced in a PDF formats with major reports. We're now moving all our studies to something called ARC Hub and ARC Storyboard, so that these studies will be online and they'll be able to essentially be managed online and added to online rather than a static report. It also provides for interactive mapping, so that we can work with interactive mapping, and we're working with the Department of Environment. And what you're going to see this county produce, I would say, within the next year or 2 years, is an ARC Hub GIS hub site that essentially spins off a lot of these works that are interrelated in a manner so that you can go in and look at transportation resilience. You can look at resilience with respect to flooding and other things. You can look at the county's going to be doing an update with respect to its all hazard mitigation plan. We're having conversations with them with respect to using an ARC Hub format for that as well. So all of this is going to come together in an area where you can move from one plan to another, and they can overlap their various work products. The other thing that we do is we do a traffic monitoring program on a regular basis. We do traffic counts throughout the county. We're back out doing them. We stopped doing them in 2020 and 2021 because of the COVID response and the lack of traffic, and we wanted to make sure that we had that work done. We've completed studies on the trail feasibility study for Shandaken. That was a great study, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. We've also done work on UCAT fleet storage work, long-range transportation plan update, electrical vehicle infrastructure. And we're currently working with UCAT right now in terms of route optimization, as UCAT goes through and takes a look at the needed changes to its routes with respect to what's going to happen as it electrifies its fleet, and also what we learn as we move to a user-free fare. We're going to work with them in terms of being able to provide some funding for that, so it doesn't have to come out of county dollars. Next slide. This takes a look at the area that we currently fund. The reason we're an MPO is because the Kingston area is an urbanized area. That's that red area up in and around Kingston. It actually extends up into two census blocks, or four census blocks, into Greene County, and it actually moves out and covers Woodstock. I will tell you that the 2020 census will redefine this urbanized area. We have some concerns about that because the census has changed its way it calculates urbanized areas, and we're having conversations with FHWA right now looking at perhaps hold harmless if we fall below the areas need, which is about 57,000 right now in an urbanized area. We need a minimum of 50,000. The other area you're looking at is the Mid-Hudson TMA. That extends to Orange County, Dutchess County, and it actually extends down into New Jersey. And the total population that the three counties represent collectively and plan for collectively is about 800,000 people. So we work with our partners in Orange County and our partners in Dutchess County, as well as their partners at NYSDOT, with respect to doing planning studies within the TMA area. Any questions about that? Next slide. This takes a look at one of the work products that we have to produce on an annualized basis. This is something called a Unified Planning Work Program. As I mentioned before, we get about $530,000 in federal funds on a regular basis to do this work. The current budget for 2022-23 is about $1 million in federal money, with a total budget of about $1.2 million in total money with respect to match. The reason for that is we have some carryover funds that we're able to carry over, and we program these funds. Some of it is actually called defensive programming to make sure that the feds don't try to recapture it. But what we end up trying to do is make sure that we get these studies done. And you see the major studies here. I will tell you the Route 9W corridor study is underway right now, and you have a you have a resolution going through Public Works tonight, I believe, for the rail safety work that's being on, that'll be started in the city of Kingston, and that's about $149,000 effort that we're currently doing this. And then we're going to program money with respect to road safety follow-up.
Dan, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
So when we submit the results of these studies to the state, they go, I assume, mm-hmm. and then what do they do with them? Do they use those for...
So I'm going to... give me 5 seconds and I'll get to that, right? So the other thing that we have to do is we adopt a long-range transportation plan. It carries a 25-year horizon. This long-range transportation plan runs to 2045. It was adopted last September. It has 8 major goals. You can read them here. I won't read them to you. The added goal with respect to this long-range transportation plan is now something called transportation equity, and we're currently working through efforts with respect to what transportation equity means in terms of the studies that we'll undergo. Any of the studies that we have to do essentially have to basically support the elements of the long-range transportation plan. The other thing that we have to do is we manage all of the federal funds that are programmed within the county to be used for projects, and we also manage federal funds that are programmed on a multi-county basis, and that's something called the Transportation Improvement Program. We have just gone through and just completed in September, we've just completed the 2023-2027, it's a 5-year program TIP. That program essentially ran about $37 million in FHWA funds and about $33 million in FTA that was funds which are transit-related funds. Those things show up in your capital program as funding sources for bridge work, funding sources for road work. They also show up in some of the projects that you're seeing, off-system bridge work. We've funded off-system bridges that the county owns, off-system bridges that Rochester owns. We're currently working with the town and village of Ellenville with respect to that. So you'll see that funding come through, and there are real projects on the ground that we program. It sounds simple, but managing these on a regular basis, essentially we're moving money around all the time. The example I would give you is we just moved about $4.5 million into the Tilson Avenue project in the town of Lloyd to allow them to complete some work in Highland. We have literally, when you look at this, everyone is expecting that we had a lot more money coming out of what they call the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That's been eaten up fairly significantly with respect to what has been a rapid rise of cost as it relates to the pandemic and some of the issues with respect to the supply chain issues that we're having.
Is that easing at all? Are you aware in the construction?
We have some conversations with a number of the engineering firms that have engineering estimates. And you probably are more familiar with this than I am, but generally what they'll say is that the estimates that they did 2 years ago are 30% to 40% more. The most recent example I have is we're adding some fencing to the Midtown Linear Park. That estimated cost of fencing is now $180 a square foot a linear foot compared to $90 a linear foot. So almost just about double. So this answers your question. Mr. Chairman, this answers your question relative to what happens to those studies. We have a really good record of turning plans into projects. Some of them here is the Ulster County Non-Motorized Transportation Plan, which we did in 2008. That resulted in a number of rail studies that got constructed. City of Kingston, the I-587 plan that we did, that resulted in the roundabout being built. We did a Building a Better Broadway Corridor conceptual design. That allowed the city to get money from NYSERDA to essentially do work on the signals, and it eventually resulted in the two-way cycle track that you currently see in Broadway. We did a signal warrant analysis for signals in Uptown Kingston. If you've ever driven through Uptown Kingston, since that study was completed, the city had removed 8 signals. The study took some interest from the federal government because it's unusual to have signals removed. We actually did turning movement counts, and we did pedestrian counts. We camered the intersections and did a complete safety analysis on those intersections in order to convince the city that it was okay to remove the signals. One of the reasons we did this, some of these signals go back to the 1930s, and they couldn't find parts for them, and they couldn't find the money to essentially to rebuild them. We're currently involved with the Town of Ulster Boyce's Lane rail crossing study. That's ongoing as it stands right now. We're working with the supervisor and others out there. UCAT bus electrification, we provided funding for that. That allowed us to begin to look at a replacement program for UCAT's buses that will get you to pretty much full electrification by 2030. Might run a little past that. The Walco Valley Rail Trail Opportunity Study, we work with the town and village of New Paltz to look at trying to urbanize the Walco Valley Rail Trail through the village of New Paltz. We had a lot of support from the community, a lot of support from the users of the trail. As a result of that, when the Empire State Trail found themselves at the end of the Empire State Trail work, had additional money, they came back and did that work. They had a set of plans and ready to go, and they came back and did that work. This legislature just funded several trail projects, which were part of the non-motorized transportation plan, including projects in Ellenville and Rochester, as well as Gardner, New Paltz to Gardner South on the Walco Valley Trail. And then a countywide road safety study, we just completed that work, and as part of that work we identified the Brunswick Road intersection, and that resulted in us being able to move to the town of Gardner and move to DOT and indicate to them how difficult it was down there, and that resulted in a signal. We also got a signal in Saugerties at the intersection of the thruway up there on Route 32, and we're currently going to go back and follow that effort up. There's now a If you look at what happened with the Infrastructure and Jobs Act bill, there is a substantial amount of money that has been poured into what I would call projects that are competitive. Right? These are discretionary projects. They're not formula funds, and they're competitive. We do have out on our website a link to that so that communities can understand it. But the point being is that right now we're starting to see that a safe roads for all program is out there. We were one of the first counties to do a countywide road safety study. Doesn't quite meet the federal requirements. We're going to go back and follow that up to make sure that we can meet the federal requirements, and that will allow municipalities and others to essentially go after the discretionary money. One of the other things I wanted to say is that we did. Let me just talk a little bit about special projects, and I'll get to there's one transportation special project in there. So the planning department, like other planning departments around the state, often becomes what I would call the Office of Miscellaneous Affairs. So if it doesn't fit well in some areas, it always fits in the planning department, and we're always willing to help. So we've taken on several projects that on a construction basis, and of those, the ones that are bold are actually capital programs. They're in the capital program. The Shandaken Trail project, the Golden Hill, the public safety radio tower are in your capital program. We're also working on a public safety campaign. And the Ulster County Brownfields program was recently funded or going through the funding process with respect to ARPA. And the Ulster County Food Security program is also going through the process with respect to ARPA. We have some ongoing projects that including the Government Operations Center. We continue to monitor the Shokan Rail Trail. We have an ongoing contract with the stewards for public safety work on that trail. The other capital projects you're seeing are the Midtown Linear Park, Kingston Rail Trail, the Ulster County Public Safety Radio Tower. We're currently involved in expanding the tower on Tonchi Mountain. We'll be in front of the town board in Olive on the 14th of October. And we're currently involved in the Veterans Cemetery the Kingston Rail Trail is probably going to go to bid, I would say, by the end of the month. We have authorization to go to bid on that. It's been about 10 years. So the next slide, if you can. This sort of illustrates those projects, and I just wanted to point to the the Elster and Delaware Shandaken Revitalization Study. We did apply for and receive, with the legislative permission, a TAP award for $4.9 million. We currently have a request for proposals coming back to us. I think it's back. I think I have four coming back to us. So we'll be awarding that design work probably, I would say, before the end of the year. Government Operations Center, you see there, there's the loading scheme for the Conchie Tower. Takes a look at the loading scheme. When we're looking at towers right now from our a rebuild perspective, we're looking at the county simulcast system, which requires all the towers talk to each other. So what ends up happening is you're putting microwave dishes on these towers. So Conchie talks to Saugerties, which talks to Kingston. And then we're going to move up and look in the Shandaken corridor right now. And we're currently under discussions with the town of Rosendale for a tower in the Rosendale area. And that one picture in the bottom, if anybody hasn't been there, that's your Veterans Cemetery under construction. So you're seeing it's quite well advanced. We're looking at not quite finishing this year because of the lateness of the work that we were doing right now. We're going to have to plant next year. All the landscaping work is going to have to go in next year, but all the hardscape will be in by the end of this year.
A quick question on the radio, on the 911 towers. So do we lease any of that space to commercial cellular companies?
It's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it because I should have mentioned it. One of the things that we're doing right now when we design our towers is we're taking a look at two things. One is what they call point-to-multipoint broadband, which allows us to essentially to provide broadband services off of our emergency services tower, and we're working with our IS people, and we're looking at our tower loading to make sure that we can use that in certain areas where point-to-multipoint broadband is necessary. We're also looking at and really, really focused on the Route 28 corridor. The Route 28 corridor cell service, once we get past Shandaken, is non-existent. Mm-hmm. And so the thought being is as we move up and we look at towers in the Shandaken area, will allow them to essentially look at loading charts so that eventually they could be used for cellular service as necessary. But that would allow them to go through an additional review process at the local level as needed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Any questions? So moving off of that, moving into housing, for those folks that attended the budget meeting this afternoon, the county has continued to essentially put money with respect to our housing program, and there is going to be, I'm going to get this wrong, so is it a reserve fund?
It's a reserve.
That's right, we can't call it a fund. It's a reserve for housing, about $17 million. We also have money in the operating budget for us to do housing work as well. We provide administrative support for something called a continuum of care. Continuum of care deals with all of the agencies that deal with homelessness within the county. It's a requirement of HUD. You have to have a continuum of care in order to essentially receive homeless funds. We get about $1.3 to $1.4 million in homeless funds that come back, not through the county, but through the lead applicant. We do administratively handle that work for the COC. We also do community development block grant funding. With the legislature, allows us to apply for community development block grant funds. We currently have two ongoing grants for the community development block grant. One is a $600,000 home ownership grant. We provide gap financing for low and moderate income homeowners. And that gap financing allows them to essentially own a home. We only help people that are below 80% of AMI within the county for that project. We also have an $800,000 housing rehabilitation grant, and we'll be also discussing doing some deep energy dives with county money with respect to that housing rehabilitation grant. That's ongoing right now. Current rehabilitation costs we used to use for these to get code compliance was about $25,000 a house. We're now looking at about $45,000 a house in order to do that. We do a sub-recipient agreement with RUPCO to provide this effort. And on the next one, I just want to talk about within the housing action plan that was completed in 2021, there was something called and Ulster County Housing Smart Communities Initiative. We've now stood up this initiative. There is a website out there. We gave our first public presentation of a webinar last night, and we have another one coming up. I believe it's on the 14th as well, or could be on the 16th. The website is open. The URL is at the bottom. For that, I urge everyone to do that, to visit that website. We also have something called an SOQ out, Statement of Qualifications, and this is for as-needed housing-related planning consultants, and part of that budget that I talked about in the beginning in terms of major cost areas, one of the incentives that we're offering communities is actually to go in and actually do housing action plans on a municipal level, to go in and help them amend their zoning statutes, so that we can streamline the development process. And when you turn, if you go to the next slide, there are 12 Housing Smart Actions, and this this program is modeled after the housing, after the Climate Smart Community Program. It's modeled after that. We're not aware of any other county in the state that has this, that is doing it in this fashion. Of the 12 Smart Housing Actions, they come into six major buckets. One is community planning. Other one is leveraging existing housing stock, and I believe you have a resolution coming that would in front of you that would allow us to apply for money to provide AD funding for ADUs, accessory dwelling units. Also, development and approval process, where there's work on that. Clean energy, energy costs, and some innovative solutions such as tiny homes or other types of things that happen with that. And each of those allows you to essentially advance in terms of the work that you, the rating that you get from bronze to gold to silver to platinum. And what we hope to have happen is using the money that's available to us through the reserve is to help communities essentially further that effort along. The other thing that we want to have a conversation with the legislature about is disincentives. If the legislature is considering efforts with respect to infrastructure, efforts with respect to open space, or efforts with respect to other types of things that communities are asking for, we should be asking the communities to join the Housing Smart Communities Program.
That was actually, I was going to ask you back on slide 13, what is the reception from other municipalities?
We already have, it was launched, I'm sorry to interrupt
you. No, that's quite all right, that's fine.
We already have a resolution out from the town of, from the village of New Paltz to join. And we have interest from at least four or five other towns to join. So right now, and it's been released for 4 days.
Well, that's good. So,
yeah.
So I guess then the effort would be to encourage those communities that have the greatest need, right, to take part in this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
So is it set up like the same district that the Climate Smart Communities are?
Similar, yeah.
Similar, okay.
Very much similar. And there's the
same areas, basically?
By municipality.
Yeah.
So it's by municipality.
Yeah.
And how is Climate Smart? I can't remember how
Climate Smart. By municipality.
So it's by, yeah, yeah. It's the same. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And there's resistance to that to some communities, but right. I think the housing part might be a little different.
There may be more resistance.
So how do we do that?
I'm sorry to say, but there actually
I hear you.
Yeah, there actually may be more resistance. The interesting thing in my mind, and I've been at this for a number of years, the discussion with respect to housing, I would say 10 years ago, was dominated by we don't have to do anything. Something, you know, the private sector will figure it out.
Step up, right?
And the discussion in many communities was about what to do so that we don't have development, not what to do so that we can accomplish smart growth. That's changed, and it's changed, I think, in two ways. One is it's changed relative to what happened prior to the pandemic. There was an ongoing sense that the public sector had to do something. And then once the pandemic hit, and the changes that were wrought by short-term rentals, there's now much more acceptance at the local level to this discussion. I would say this. The business community has been lackadaisical with respect to its presence at local planning board meetings and local town board meetings. And so what ends up happening is the open space group and environmental groups dominate that discussion, and the business groups are not joining that discussion in a robust manner. They'll come to us and say, we need more housing, we need more transportation, we need more this. But at the end of the day, their voice needs to be heard at the local level. So we've had conversations with the Chamber of Commerce.
They can coexist, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I have to say that with respect to our Golden Hill project, we reached out to the Kingston Chamber, and after much work from Mark, we finally got a support letter for the Golden Hill project from the Kingston Chamber. Okay. So the next slide, it gives you a sense where we are with respect to the Kingston Planning Board has backed the Golden Hill project. We have a site plan approval. The city of Kingston will tonight consider rezoning for Golden Hill to allow the project to move forward. Our demolition is ongoing. Asbestos removal is pretty much done, and we should be moving to actually tear the jail down sometime, I would think, next week. They're going to cut power, I think, sometime this week or early next week. We also have what they call an RFEI. It's a request for expressions of interest out. If you recall that we pulled several houses from the tax sales. There was 10, I think, or 9 pulled. We put out, at the legislator's request, prior to surplusing those houses, we put out a request for expressions of interest. They are due back, or have been due back. I haven't seen them yet. But it's my understanding that we do have a responder that came back that has expressed interest in essentially moving these houses from essentially what are now, in some instances, very dilapidated houses, to essentially move them forward and then make them available to those folks that are earning less than 120% of the area median income. And we'll run that through with the legislature's permission. We'd run that through the House of County Housing Development Corporation.
Were any of those under consideration for respite houses?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we've looked at them for respite houses. They don't work for respite houses because they're too small.
Yeah, they're usually
but we are looking at a house in Ellenville for a respite house right now. There's a house that's for sale for Ellenville that we are looking at, and we've met with the realtor down there. We've met with Tara went down with me for mental health. And we're also looking at the house on Towpath Road, which has been requested to be released. That site has been requested to be released to the Economic Development UCEDA. But we're also looking at that and having discussions. If that does get released, that house would not end up in the private sector's hand, or at least not in a private sector for profit hands. Mm-hmm. It would end up either being an affordable house or a respite house.
There are 4 units, right?
4 units. And I was out there yesterday. It's pretty scary. I opened the door and it kind of opened up, and I'm thinking about the bear that they found in the house up in Shambakan. Maybe I'll wait for reinforcements before I go in. So we're supposed to go out. We're going to visit that site, I think, sometime this week. We're going to go out with Public Works and visit it sometime this week. Community Development Block Grants, this is just to give you a sense of the legislature's participation in this. The resolution in February of 22 to allow us to apply, and the funding came through. We awarded $800,000. The resolution in August of 21 that allowed us to apply, and then the funds were awarded for $600,000 on those. Open space and agriculture. Next slide. Oh, you're already ahead of me. You're trying to rushing me along.
I'm following you.
There you
flip
go.
Your pages.
The agriculture, we do support the Farmland Protection Board. We are currently reviewing Ag District 4, which is in the northern and western parts of the county. The Farmland Protection Board is going to request a hearing from you folks shortly, and there'll be a report filed. That district is very well positioned right now to continue. I think we're only recommending, Farmland Protection Board only recommended, I think, 4 or 2 lots parcels be removed from the district. So it's a very stable district, and we continue to do agricultural additions. And as I mentioned before, we're going to be engaged in essentially updating the Farmland Protection Plan, which the last time it was updated was 1997.
Right.
And we will be updating that plan, as I mentioned, using an ArcGIS, an Arc Storyboard, an ArcHub site rather than a normal. Laura Sopas, we continue to be involved in this. If you recall, We had money from a consent order that was signed by the department to essentially conduct a stream management plan. We have, by resolution of the legislature, approved a contract with a company called Interflu. That work should be starting shortly on the lower surface. We've been handed the Ulster County Food Security Program, and that's an ARPA-funded project. And then the next slide is just to give you a sense of what some of this looks like in Ulster County. And then finally, land use. Well, I think it is finally. Land use and demographics. This has to do with the county's planning board's responsibility for referrals. We get about 200 and some odd referrals every year from various municipalities. Effectively, what the county planning board is able to do is that if it's a discretionary decision at the local level that involves land use, the county planning board has an opportunity to weigh in on that discussion. And as part of that opportunity, in order to overrule a county planning board, it requires a majority plus one at the local board. We exempt a substantial amount of, because we can, we exempt a substantial amount of land use actions from review to sort of streamline, doing our own streamlining of the development proposal process. But you get a sense that what we do is we've been instrumental in terms of helping communities do changes to accessory dwelling unit statutes, inclusionary zoning. County, we've adopted a set of countywide design guidelines, and we do local law reviews on a regular basis. We led the charge in many instances with respect to short-term rentals. I will tell you that there is a recent court case out of Louisiana that is going to impact how short-term rentals are currently regulated. The current regulations for short-term rentals is recommended by the county planning department and the county planning board, and as adopted throughout as an industry standard, is to essentially regulate short-term rentals and differentiate between owner and non-owner occupied. The court case out of Louisiana basically says that that's a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause, because non-owner occupied people living in other states can't participate. So there's going to be a sea change in terms of how short-term rentals need to be regulated, and we're starting to work back with municipalities and changing our own recommendations with respect to short-term rentals.
Is that in the court system? Is that decision?
While it's not applicable, there's a Jersey court case that's a little bit different, and while it's not applicable, I'm not an attorney, but the current work relative to what we're seeing from others has been that the argument in the case is persuasive, and they expect it would be able to be applied to other districts. Gives you a sense of what we're looking at here. We did do an accessory apartment review law in the town of Marbletown. We did a short-term rental law in the town of Olive. Some of those things, the one on the right-hand bottom side is actually the site plan and schematic for Cresco in Allenville. And then the one on the top is something with respect called Bayside. It's a project in the town of Marlboro. And then, last but not least, is the capital program. We do a lot of work with capital program work on terms of supporting others, getting them through the planning process. The county is not immune from zoning, so we help a lot of the communities when we're citing things, get them through the planning process. We also do work on the State Environmental Quality Review Act. We're looked to, in some instances, help communities, help the various departments get through major changes that they have to make to projects. The Veterans Cemetery is a classic example when we ran into issues associated with SHPO and archaeological work. There was some thought that there was Indian burials on the site, and we worked with the consultant and Veterans Cemetery folks to essentially move that through. And then the last one is a great picture of the Ashokan Rail Trail, and that has now had somewhere in the neighborhood of 700,000 visitors. So thank you. And any questions?
Quick question. There's been some conversation about bringing an architect in-house rather than using consultants, and I just wondered if that conversation.
Then if I can.
Okay.
Sorry. I took that back to DPW, and we already have kind of standby contracts with architects and engineers, yeah. And then talking with the buildings and grounds side are more of our internal shortcoming would be on the facility side, not on the roads and bridges side, where we do have engineers in-house. So we have discussed with them about how to use those when we're doing, you know, bigger facility-type projects. So I think that's something that we can formalize as more of a...
Specifically in the estimation.
Well, that's exactly where. It's like, you know, in the initial round when we're walking these right. through and making the estimates for the capital program, to have a... you know, a certified engineer in the first instance give us better, more in tune kind of estimates. That's great. All.
I think we're just eliminating a lot of confusion.
Yeah, we
agreed.
Yeah. So one of the things that we did do is we're aware of the fact and had made recommendations to DPW to essentially do what you would know what this is, the LDSA list that comes out from the state to essentially have on call. Architects and engineers, and they've divided those into categories. So you see the various categories in terms of whether it's civil, whether it's architectural, whether it's bridge design work. So they divided them into categories. That allows us essentially to go out and do expression of interest letters rather than do a formal RFP, get the necessary quotes in, and move forward. We did add some money into the county planning department's budget to support the capital program. Part of that support to actually go in and do scoping on these projects so that we can understand them better when we get down to start asking the legislature, so there's no surprises. I shouldn't say that. There's always going to be surprises. There's less surprise when we start looking at dollar amounts and what we need to do in these buildings. Okay.
Thank you. Great. So before you go, Dennis, I just want to take a moment and, you know, thank you very much for that. Very, you know, it was an excellent presentation and kind of gives you know, the committee an idea of the breadth of the work that the planning department is involved in on a day-to-day basis and the impact that you have. You work with just about everybody that we deal with on a day-to-day basis in the county, and, you know, it's extremely difficult, you know, from where I sit, where you have the ability to juggle the you know, the priorities of the environmentalists and the developers and the land use and the ag society and budgets and everybody else who has something to say about projects. And, you know, I just want to take 5 minutes and thank you for your commitment to this county over the course of your career. You know, I was gone 10 years, but I come back and you're as strong as ever. And, you know, and your contribution to this county just can't be overlooked. And I just wanted to take a minute and thank you for that as the chair of this committee.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I just want to say that there's no you here, there's a we. And one of the things I think that's really important for this legislature to understand is the quality of the staff that we currently have. I have staff down there that literally been there. I think none of them's been there less than 10 years except my most recent hire, which came out of California on the housing work. The reason we're successful as we are is the fact that no one's walking out the door at 5 o'clock. The work's not done. Those people, essentially, one of my staff stepped up to essentially work as a traffic safety coordinator when we thought the traffic safety board needed some help. And the attention to detail and the attention of their concern for the constituents of Ulster County and for the work that we do and for working with you is the reason we can be so successful. My hat's off to them. They deserve credit.
They're good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Question for Director Doyle, please. Are you going to speak at all to Resolution 497?
Yes.
Okay.
Great. All right. Thank you. So, with that, I know we're running a little long here. We do have a few resolutions to get through tonight, so I'll start with resolution number 492, which is urging the United States Congress, New York State Governor, and the New York State Legislature to codify into law the right to food as a fundamental human right. And I think we have some of the sponsors at this table.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'll accept a motion.
Motion.
A second.
Second.
Right. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
Food for everybody.
Food for everyone. Free food.
It's all free.
Resolution 493, which again is a memorializing resolution, urging New York State Governor and New York State Legislature to adopt legislation guaranteeing universal access to free meals for students in grades K through 12. I'll accept a motion. Second.
Second.
And I got a quick question. Why not pre-K? We have pre-K now. Should we have pre-K?
That is a good question.
Should we amend that?
I think we have to
figure out the logistics because I think it's public school. It's not, and pre-K is not always public, right? Uh-huh. It can also be private, so I think...
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
I do.
So we have to look at... Yeah. I mean, we wanted, obviously, we would like to have kids have food, so if we can look into the logistics and add that, yeah. I think that would be great.
Well, state-funded schools.
Yeah.
Something like that, right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, great.
So
okay.
Do this and then do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Great. Resolution 497, which is amending the 2022 to 2027 capital improvement program, increasing funding for capital project number 642, which is the ARPA Home Energy Improvement and Job Training Project.
Oh, wait a minute.
Amending the 2022 capital fund budget for the Department of Finance. All right, second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
I just want to remind people the basis of this. So this was a different resolution at one point, and what it was the combination of this job training program and the homeowner energy improvements. And what we did was we separated out the job training portion into its own resolution and funded it for $90,000. Then we decided that we would come back and take a look at this after it was reworked a bit into the actual home energy improvements section of it. So that's what we're going to hear about tonight. Correct? Anything?
Absolutely.
Saying that wrong? Okay.
No.
And just to clarify, it was moved by Corcoran?
Criswell Corcoran.
Criswell.
So is there any further discussion, or do we all understand that? Did Peter explain that clearly enough for us? Okay. So then... all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Now okay. We can circulate it.
Now we can pass that one right. All right, so that's just me. Yeah. All right, so resolution, final resolution for the night. Oh, no, we got two more. 501 is authorizing County of Ulster to submit an application and assurances.
You guys signed it already.
To New York State Housing Trust Fund as part of New York State Homes and Community Renewal for the Plus One ADU program in partnership with the City of Kingston and RUBCO. Department of Planning. That's
motion.
A mouthful. 1 second.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on this? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and then the last resolution for the night will be resolution 502, and that's approving the execution of a contract for $149,000 entered into by the county for WSP, Department of Planning. So I'll accept the motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Second, Legislator Lee. Okay.
I don't know what the body of the resolution says, but the actual number is $149,215. So if we can make that amendment,
I got 149 even.
Yeah, it should be 149,215. It actually was an arm mistake. It was a mistake of the consultant in the.
All right.
So dock them the 215.
So motion. Motion to amend.
Motion to amend to the actual figure.
The amount.
And if he says no, we'll put it back up.
Second by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, then all those in favor of the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. Thank you. That ends our resolutions for the evening. Is there any old business? Is there any new business?
I'll make
a little clearer list.
Chair?
Yeah.
Yep. I believe we have guests that wanted to speak.
Oh, right. We need to get that on the agenda, and I apologize for that.
I'm a short timer, so.
That's okay. So, floor is yours.
I just wanted to say goodbye, everybody. Thank you very much. I am leaving my role as director at Quail Cooperative Extension after 5 years, but I'm not going far. I'm going down to be director of the fruit lab in Highland. Cornell is reinvesting in agricultural research, and they're going to rebuild that lab. It's an interesting mix down there. It's 22 acres owned by Cornell, and the building is actually owned by the apple producers.
Huh.
And they want to rebuild it, and they were looking for a director, and I was helping them find that position, and we realized it was me.
There you go.
So CCE is going to put an interim in place and immediately do a search for a new director. You'll have somebody competent and capable And but I do look forward to seeing you guys also in that new position down the
road. Great. Well, congratulations.
We're going to be expanding, looking to support agriculture, and thank you very much. I did want to introduce Melanie Forsham, if you haven't met her before.
We've met.
She leads our 4-H program in the county, and I just wanted to make sure we had several handoffs with CCE before I left.
Okay, great. And when is your last day at CCE?
The 14th of October.
Okay. So we'll have one more meeting.
You said you have 22 acres down there.
Yeah.
Plenty of room for a meat processor. No, not really.
Congratulations. Yes, congratulations. Thank you.
All right, with that, we can come on a tour.
Yeah, I've been. We'll do that. Should we wait till after you do some work there, or do you want to come before?
Right, there's already a conference room. I think the programs committee we had there. I invited there 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah,
before my time.
Yeah. I'm less than a mile away.
Yeah.
So you can ride the bike over.
Big roast.
Yeah. Big roast. Okay.
Well,
that'll
do
it.
Tomorrow.
That'll do it. All right. Well, great. Well, so we will definitely do that. Fawn's going to take note. Mike's going to take note if Fawn's leaving, but Mike will take note of that. And we're going
to
hold a
committee. Oh, we can introduce Mike to make sure everybody knows.
That's
Mike.
The other thing. So with Fawn is retiring, as everyone knows, in a couple of months here. And so Mike's going to be transitioning into the clerk for this committee. And just want to say hi and welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Michael.
And you came in at a really good meeting tonight. You know, they're not usually this.
I forgot the
table.
Hey, can you imagine if we had a full compliment?
We would still. All right. So with that, Legislator Lit.
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Second. Hewitt or Chris, how you doing? And thank you guys very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael.
Thank you.
We'll be seeing you in
No.
Just after Easter.
Okay.
Michael, by the way, is customary for you to bring snacks?
We already
used to pay for them.
Not a problem.
I know.
But they wanted to stop the recorder. But I do know our folks are going to want to hear about the changes.
Okay.
Because it's a whole different matter.
Yeah.